Distilled is a production of Chemical Processing. Chemical Processing focuses on serving engineers, designing, and operating plants in the chemical industry.
Welcome to Chemical Processing's Distilled podcast series, Operator Training Edition. This podcast and its transcript can be found at chemicalprocessing.com, or you can subscribe via your favorite platform. And for Google Podcast subscribers, do note that they will retire that app April 2nd, 2024, so please switch to another platform. I'm Tracy Purdom, Editor-in-Chief of Chemical Processing, and joining me is Dave Strobar, Founder and Principal Human Factors Engineer for Bevel Engineering. Dave is also the founder of the Center for Operator Performance. Hey, Dave, what have you learned this week?
Oh, I think some good things, Tracy. So I think the listeners will get some benefit from some insights regarding team training that the Center for Operator Performance has been researching.
The episode, obviously, we're talking about today is biggest barriers to team performance. And I know you have just worked on this research in this area, so I am prepared to grill you with a bunch of questions. And to get us kicked off, can you tell me briefly about the research that you did?
Well, certainly. So one of the major thrusts in both medicine and aerospace is around what they call crew resource management, but that's just a fancy word for team training. And it stems from a number of incidents where the individuals might have been, you know, adequately trained at their job, knew what they were doing, but they didn't function as a team. And we've all seen this in sports where the better team will often win out over the better collection of athletes. The Center for Operator Performance, the membership, said we want to look at this in more detail, because obviously there are teams within the process plants, all sorts of teams. You know, we think of the obvious team of the operating crews, and certainly they are a team, but there's other teams as well. Operations and maintenance get together to form teams to get certain work done, and technical and maintenance and technical and operations. So the center said, well, let's try to understand how do we get better teaming at our facilities? How do we capitalize on, we may have competent individuals, but now we want extremely high performance teams at the same time.
And that's a great point, because you think about it, you know, we're very siloed, and I know exactly how to do my job, and it doesn't occur to me that I have to do my job with you as well. So, the team training as opposed to individual training is super important. So I'm glad you brought that up. Can you share some examples of common barriers that teams encounter when they're trying to work together effectively?
Yes, absolutely. So the research, which was done by Scott Tannenbaum and Eduardo Salas, they're two of the top people in this area of team training. So they did a survey of over 280 operations and maintenance personnel, trying to understand, well, what were some of the things that would tend to get in the way of forming a good team or inhibited team performance? And from the survey, you know, they came out with 16 different characteristics that, you know, were cited as this can get in the way. But there were five of them that came out in terms of being a major risk to having that done. Two of them, fatigue and workload, were sort of at the top of the list. And as you can imagine, you know, hey, I'm tired. You know, I teaming requires some effort, some energy. You know, just let me do my job. You know, I don't want to have to deal with, you know, these other people. That is a major barrier. And of course, the real fear here is, of course, that during turnarounds is when you're going to have really high workload. You know, that was, part of the Texas City, event was occurring in this sort of high workload period. And so you have to be, very sensitive to that particular period of time, because that can get in the way. Two of the others, related, one was competing or shifting priorities. And the other being there was conflicting information in different sources. So if I'm a team, what you have is you have a group of individuals who are trying to accomplish a common goal. And so that's the basic definition for, you know, when a team exists. but achieving a common goal is difficult if that goal is constantly moving. And so that's where if you have, you know, competing priorities, or I'm talking to different people and I'm getting different information, that makes it very difficult for a team to function. And so, you know, this is sort of a management, type of issue where, you know, are the teams getting consistent input as to what the priority is, different parts of the organization, and are they getting, you know, the same information where, yes, you know, we understand what we need to do and what needs to happen. So, those two sort of match together. And then the final one of these top barriers was the lack of technical expertise. The, in the case that we were looking at, which was the teaming of, maintenance and operations. So you have a case where this is what they would call dynamic teaming, in terms of maintenance shows up to get some work done. They're working with operations to do it safely. So you have this dynamic team. The team forms to accomplish this task. So as I said, teams exist to achieve a goal. You know, so this goal might be to, you know, isolate a line, replace a pump, whatever. So they form a team to do that, and then that team disbands when the goal is achieved, as opposed to a static team like the crew itself. But in this sort of dynamic teaming between operations and maintenance, do we have the appropriate technical expertise to make sure that we are doing that safely and that we can accomplish that goal? A personal example, I was with an operator and we were walking by a maintenance craft worker who was grinding away some rust on a cooling water line that they dug out below the surface of the ground, and it looked pretty rusty. And I looked at my operator and I said, you know, I'm not sure how thick of metal is, you know, underneath there. And the operator shrugged his shoulders. He says, well, I'm guessing they've x-rayed it. And, you know, there's certainly enough to warrant grinding away the rust. And so we moved on, and we were out in the unit. And as we were coming back to the control room, of course, there's this just stream of water pouring out of this pipe.
Oh, jeez.
Because no, there wasn't enough metal underneath that rust to do it. So, you know, there's a case where, you know, there is this sort of trust of, well, I'm hoping somebody has done the x-rays to make sure there's enough metal underneath there. But that sort of input from the engineering or the technical group, you know, is this something we really can do? It tends to be a barrier. So here, you know, in the case I just gave you, that team, and you could say, well, they failed to achieve their goal. But part of that barrier, the risk to doing that effectively is, you know, did they have the appropriate expertise to say, yes, you know, here's how much metal there is underneath that rust, and it's safe to grind the rust away.
What are some of the warning signs that you can identify to get in front of that so that someone feels that they can go, okay, did someone actually x-ray this, or you know, the blind faith going into that?
Well, so some of it is ongoing commitment in which you, after major events, major teaming exercises, you do a debrief. And this is critical within the military. We need to learn from what we have done, and that's a key part of team training is, have we learned? And so as you go through major events or even minor events, being able to do a self-assessment and say, you know, how did we function as a team? And are there ways that we can get better? One of the outputs from this research was a checklist that can be done very quickly to look at how did we do, you know, are there problems with making that happen? And it just goes down the basic characteristics of good teaming and looks at, you know, well, how, you know, did we have a shared understanding? You know, did we all understand what we were supposed to be doing? Did we have good communications? You know, so that did people have the right updates at the right time to know what was happening? Did they have good psychological safety during this? Did people feel they could speak up and question what was going to happen? You know, did they get the necessary support, you know, technical in this case, but other support as well, as far as, you know, did somebody, you know, have my back kind of thing? Did we connect with people outside our team? You know, here's in the example I use. Well, they didn't connect with the technical group. Here it resulted in a, you know, sort of a minor incident. You know, there's a lot of water around, but obviously that could have been far worse. This was a cooling water return line, not the cooling water intake. So, but that's the kind of thing you want to learn from and say, hey, we didn't do a good job of connecting outside the team. And are we learning and thinking ahead of what's going to happen? So these debriefings are absolutely essential in a wide range of applications, but in this case with team training, to be able to go through and assess how did we do as a team? Because that, again, we tend to focus on individuals. You know, well, how did the individual do in this particular activity, and not thinking about, well, how did the team do? And that's where the Center for Operator Performance, as part of this research, you know, a quick checklist, so that as you go through on a regular basis, do these debriefs and use that to say, hey, you know, we need to get better. And here's a case where my operator and I, we both thought, this looks suspicious. We should have come back later and said, you know, we should have raised that concern because it looks suspicious to us. And we just accepted that, well, somebody must know what they're doing. But those are the kind of things you want to, you know, learn from, you know, not in a finger pointing or blame way, but just, you know, hey, yeah, next time let's raise the question so that we make sure that, you know, we get the necessary information, safely perform that task or achieve that common goal.
Making an example of yourself and giving that psychological safety to those that are maybe on a rung or two below on the ladder, saying, okay, I feel now empowered because even my higher ups kind of missed something. So that's interesting. Let's talk a little bit about, you did mention psychological safety. Let's talk a little bit more about that and its importance in team environments.
Well, I don't know if, you know, I can pick out one area that is the most critical, but it is certainly near the top, that ability to feel that I can speak up and point out that something seems wrong, or admit that, you know, I don't know something. I'm not sure. We've had cases, one of the most famous and actually one of the incidents that began this focus on team training and crew resource management was a flight out of Washington National Airport. And there was an instrument malfunction in the cockpit, and the pilot was taking an action that the co-pilot thought was wrong. You know, in the hierarchy of the sort of their military training background, well, the captain's always right, and you don't question the captain. And the result was that plane ended up in the Potomac River because the captain was wrong. And but the co-pilot didn't feel, you know, he had that psychological safety to say, hey, you know, I think we should be doing something different. And so that began that look into, well, okay, how does the team function to make that happen? So that ability to speak up, to admitting that you're wrong. You know, one of the things that used to occur, that most plants have changed, is maintenance would often come in and, you know, they would have a permit. And of course the operator would say, well, do you know where this is? And the maintenance would say, oh yeah, yeah, I know. And the operators would often gauge whether they were telling the truth or not. You know, if they were like, yeah, I know, you know, and then they would say, well, I don't think they really know. And I wish they would have just said, no, I don't, you know, I'm not sure where this is at. Now most plants require that operations walk down the job site with maintenance, but it wasn't too long ago that you sort of trusted maintenance to tell you that, hey, I don't know something, or I'm not sure about this. And I was at a plant where during the time that I was there, maintenance was out cutting into what turned out to be a live hydrocarbon line, and they were caught before they went through it, but they got their lines mixed up. And so they were supposed to be cutting through a dead line. Instead, they were cutting through a live line, and fortunately, an operator was walking by, and it's like, what are you doing? And, you know, I have this permit to cut through this line. He's like, well, that's not the right line. It would have been far better for the maintenance to say, I don't know where that is, or I don't know something. And that's a part of psychological safety, that I can say those things, and I won't be ridiculed, I won't be punished. You didn't know where this was. And psychological safety says, yeah, that is something that, we have. I feel I can speak up. And it starts from the top down. Those plants that have good psychological safety, it's because the management and the organization have set it up so that, this isn't this blame game. And there's an effort in the industry, called HOP, Human and Organizational Performance. And a large part of that is that, you know, well, let's learn from what we're doing. So instead of saying, well, let's blame somebody that made a mistake, let's try to find out what we need to do to improve things. And those organizations that are successful at that, it's because upper management says, yes, we want to learn. We want to get better. Our goal is not to just blame. And there's a phrase, blame and retrain. You know, well, you didn't know what you're going to do, and we're going to retrain you as an individual. In this case, you know, HOP is saying, no, we want to learn, you know, well, why is it that, this didn't go the way we thought? And if management has that kind of view, that sort of approach, that provides that sort of psychological safety, and it permeates down through the organization. So, individuals that can think, yeah, that doesn't seem right. You know, where my operator, I could go, hey, that doesn't look good, what you're doing there. You know, are you sure that this is, you know, is correct? It's not going to prevent all mistakes, because something, yeah, I'm sure. You want that ability to question, is this the right thing to do? Or be able to say, I don't know how to do this, or I'm unsure. You know, I haven't done this in 3 years, so I might need a little support in making that happen. And that can be done, without a feeling of, you know, retribution, or, you know, people are going to think less of me, but instead they're going to actually think better. Hey, better to say, I'm not sure, than to go in, not really knowing what you're doing, and then having some sort of, mistake, with a whole wide range of consequences.
And you're talking about management down, and that's how you foster these types of great team environments. Going back to your sports analysis, we've seen great individual players on a team that don't shine under a bad coach, and then the coach gets fired, and then the next year the team does great because there's a new management in place to foster that. How can team members become good team members? What constitutes that? How can they be a better team member and maybe unlearn some of the bad things that they learned from the bad hierarchy of top down, don't question?
You would like, you know, management to be totally supportive. You might end up in a situation where, you know, that our management, our coach, you know, they don't have it, but, you know, hey, we still want to win. And, so these teams, they want to be safe, and, they want to make sure that, you know, the jobs are getting done. So there's really, you know, sort of these, you know, six key areas, that individuals can do at the lower level to make sure that, yeah, we're going to function as a team. So, the first one is shared understanding. Do we all understand what we're going to do? And that's more than just saying, do we all understand and have everybody nod? You know, have people state, you know, what is it we're going to be doing, and make sure that, you really are on the same page. And we've seen that over and over again, where everybody will say, yeah, I know what to do. And then you say, well, write down what it is you think you're going to do. And the answers aren't the same. So, you know, don't just assume that that shared understanding, but articulate it. Communications, you know, that gets hammered in all sorts of situations. But, you know, are we actually keep providing updates of what's occurring? One of the critical ones that military done is repeating back what it is you've heard. And this is very important in the sort of high noise environments that are occurring in these plants. You know, when there's some information going back and forth, and you're like, did he say the B pump or the D pump? I couldn't really quite hear. Repeat back, I heard you say, or, you know, repeat back. And I've been to a refinery that was staffed mostly with ex-Navy personnel, and they were excellent at always repeating back. This is what I heard you say. Am I correct in that? The psychological safety, yeah, it'd be great if you were supported from, you know, everyone that was part of the team and the organization. But a lot of it is just, you know, speak up and, bring it up that this doesn't seem right. And the ability to say, I'm not sure that is going on there. Supporting each other, you need to think of yourselves as a team. And again, using that sports analogy, you know, we've all seen it where the superstar is just concerned with themselves and what their stats can be. But you want to make sure that, hey, I need to help other people. And one of the key things there is I need to hold other people accountable. You know, you didn't do that right. You should have taken them out and shown them the job site. So that, you know, you're not allowing bad behaviors to continue. You need to be able to communicate outside the team. You know, well, who else might want to know something about this so that, they can be prepared and they can hopefully, getting back to that, speaking up, they can say, well, wait a minute. I didn't approve that. You know, why are you doing this? And, so hopefully head off some of those, misunderstandings or lack of shared understandings. And then finally, you know, trying to say, hey, you know, learning from the, team's experience. And, so, you know, if, you have an organization that isn't really good at that as an individual, just trying to, you know, bring that up, you know, hey, we just did this, major isolation. You know, hopefully the shift lead, the head operator would say, hey, let's see what we could have done better. If you're not in that position, you know, again, that sort of speaking up, maybe suggesting, you know, hey, can we do a quick, 5-10 minute, review, of what we did? Cause, you know, I think it could have gone better. So those are the things as an individual you can try to build and have it move up the organization. And ultimately, you know, if you're a member of that team, you are going to be subjected to whatever results that team has, you know, win or lose, you're going to be part of it. So if you don't want to exhibit these behaviors, you don't want to be a good teammate, as it were, you know, you're going to have to, potentially, face the consequences. And as we've seen, those can be quite severe at some time. So, it would be nice if plant manager on down, you know, all of this were there, but certainly individuals can do what is necessary. And that's part of this effort that the center put together, was being able to create what are these sort of behaviors that you want to see. So it can be used at, you know, any particular level, whether it's down at the people who are part of the team level, or if it's at a managerial level, that says, you know, we want to be better at this aspect of what we're doing. You know, your example, we need a different coach, because we know our people know what to do, but they're not doing it well together. So either direction, there are ways to try to build that, that skill in functioning as a team.
Are there any tools that folks can use to get started to create effective teams?
There are. That's what one of the goals in this particular research that the center did is we wanted a, you know, create a blueprint for how would you implement this kind of team training activity. And so the researchers went through and created a number of different tools that an individual or an organization can apply in terms of being able to explain to the higher ups why is this important, being able to do a survey of the organization, you know, how good are we at teaming with this. Self-assessment guides, that's what I was talking about, is, you know, as you get done with some particular activity, going, how did we do as a team, you know, so down at the team level. The, you know, looking at, well, how do we build this psychological safety? And is, you know, while it's very important for team training, it's important on a wide range of topics, with just human and organizational performance. And so, you know, training on, well, how do we get, psychological safety and, you know, carrying through some exercises in practicing that. How do you do that? And again, you know, functioning as a team is a skill, like any other skill, and skills get better with practice. And so part of that is to have exercises, realistic scenarios of teaming activities that the group can perform and say, you know, how did we do in this particular scenario? What would we have done? How could we have gotten better? So that ability to practice the teaming skills is essential to both building and maintaining those skills. And as part of this project, a number of different scenarios have been created that you can use as training material to teach a team to be a good team. So that, you know, it isn't something that, you know, as we sort of talk about, I can't just put a bunch of people together and say, now go work as a team, because it's a skill and they need to learn, well, what is that skill? Those different things that we were talking about earlier in terms of, communication and speaking up and the shared understanding. So, you know, unless they understand and have been trained that that's important, you probably are not going to be getting the performance that you would like from the teams that you have, whether it's a static team like a crew or it's a dynamic team, a group of individuals that get together for a purpose, for some activity, and then dissolve after that activity. So whether it's a static or a dynamic team, they still need to have the skill set necessary to maximize their performance.
Let's go back to, you're talking about the teaming scenarios. Can you explain that a little bit more? Are they like little vignettes that you walk through, or do you go and do a team building exercise and trust falls? What are those?
Well, no, we don't do the trust falls. And I often laugh with the various things that people think are actually going to promote teaming. But these are realistic exercises that depict a situation. You're putting the person in that environment. You're describing what it is that you know is going to be happen. As you're going through this particular scenario, where would psychological safety be important? You know, and so that the scenario, you might have somebody bringing up some issue of, well, you know, I don't know where that is. And you can talk about, well, how, you know, what's a good way to respond to that? What's a bad way to, have responded to that? So you can focus on some different aspects of what makes a good team as you're going through that. There's some key questions that you can ask in terms of in this particular scenario, what could have gone wrong? How are you thinking ahead? Where is it that you might have needed more information? So these are sort of little group exercises, can be done very quickly. You know, there we often talk about, you know, toolbox talks and those sort of things. This could fit into that category where it's very, you know, hey, I'm going to give you a scenario. And rather than just saying, do you all understand what psychological safety is? Yeah, we understand. Put it into context. And that's the whole purpose of the scenario, is context. And so in this context, you know, if this this pipe fitter is coming in during a turnaround, and, you know, they show up in, you know, half hour before shift change, and they're unsure about this or that. How do you respond? How should the team function in that particular environment? Take the team through so they understand where those potential pitfalls were. You know, do we have that shared understanding? Are we communicating with the right people? If the individual didn't feel, if you thought they seemed hesitant or unsure, but they didn't bring it up, ask them. This would be the psychological safety. Hey, are you sure? Do you need some help in this area? Holding others accountable in terms of, let me help you out there. Let me make sure that we get this right. And so these scenarios are kind of very easy, short training exercises. But the whole goal, though, is to reinforce what are those skills? What is the skill set that you want to have in order to develop those teamwork skills and become a good team member?
Dave, is there anything you want to add? We've covered a lot of ground today. Anything you want to add on this topic?
No, I think it's an area that, a lot of people know is important, but oftentimes it's like, well, but what do I do? What is it that needs to occur? And the defense and aviation community has understood the value of that. The medical community certainly has, in terms of, how your surgical team functions. And I think that's something in our industry that we're now moving in that direction. But I think a key part of a lot of this is that ability to move from just, hey, we've got well-trained individuals, to we have well-trained individuals on a well-trained team. And I'm looking forward to seeing how this evolves over the next few years.
Well, Dave, as always, you are here to help us ensure that we're on the same page as teams and with our operator training and making sure that everything works well and people can go home at the end of their shift happy and healthy. Want to stay on top of operator training and performance? Remember to subscribe to this free podcast via your favorite podcast platform to learn best practices and keen insight. You can also visit us at chemicalprocessing.com for more tools and resources aimed at helping you achieve success. On behalf of Dave, I'm Tracy, and this is Chemical Processing's Distilled Podcast Operator Training Edition. Thanks for listening. Thanks again, Dave.
I appreciate it. Thank you, Tracy.